We're on 1,000 planets and spreading out.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
To the Batmobile.
May the force be with you.
Who is that masked man?
Avengers, assemble.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Fantastic Forum. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. As always, we'll begin the show with some genre-related news. SpaceX has filed a Federal Communications Commission permit request for the second test flight of Starship from Starbase, Texas. According to the application, the company has requested a six-month window from June 15th to December 15th for the launch. The FCC regulates all spacecraft communication in Earth's orbit. SpaceX hasn't indicated whether Starship's second orbital launch attempt will carry any payload, but the application filed Monday said an FCC special temporary authority is necessary for the mission. In order to actually launch, SpaceX will also need permission from the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, which issues rocket launch licenses. The 58th Annual Nebula Awards Ceremony was held on May 14th. The Nebula Awards are given to the writers of the most outstanding speculative fiction works released in 2022, as voted on by full associate and senior members of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Association. You can find a full list of the winners on one of the FF social media pages. And while you're there, if you haven't already, follow us on Instagram and like us on Facebook. We like to be followed and we love to be liked. Earlier this week, Marvel Studios announced premiere dates for two Disney Plus series. Season 2 of Loki premieres October 6th and Echo premieres November 29th. In a first for a Marvel series, all episodes of Echo will release on the premiere date. Comic-Con International has announced the nominees for the 2023 Will Eisner Comic Industry Awards. Nominations, which are selected by a blue ribbon panel of judges, are for projects published between January 1st and December 31st, 2022. Named for noted comics creator Will Eisner, the awards are celebrating their 35th year of highlighting what are deemed the finest publications and creators in the comics industry. Image and DC received the most nominations, Image with 20 and DC with 11. You can find a full list of the nominees on one of the aforementioned FF social media pages. The Eisner Awards will be presented at a ceremony during San Diego Comic-Con on July 21st at the San Diego Hilton Bayfront Hotel. A new trailer dropped this week for The Walking Dead: Dead City. You can view the trailer on one of the aforementioned FF social media pages. The Walking Dead: Dead City premieres June 18th on AMC and AMC+. Disney has confirmed that Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser will close later this year. The experience opened less than 18 months ago with considerable fanfare and had been recognized for establishing a new level of innovation and immersive entertainment. It was envisioned as a new kind of interactive experience incorporating physical, digital, and live entertainment elements where guests would take part in a real-world adventure guided by actors who would assign them missions. Galactic Star Cruiser charged about $5,000 for a minimum of a two-night stay for two people. The occupancy rate was consistently low, despite there being only 100 rooms. Guests and reviewers had complained about the hotel's small, windowless rooms, which were intended to imitate the feel of a spaceship. the lack of amenities like a swimming pool or gymnasium, as well as the reliance on phones and technology. Guests were loaned an iPhone preloaded with different missions for the duration of their stay. The experience is set to close on September 30th and is reportedly not accepting any new bookings. The East Coast Black Age of Comics Convention is today in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the forerunner in urban comic book and sci-fi conventions. ECBOC offers year-round programs including STARS, storytelling that advances reading skills, and ESTEAM, which focuses on science, technology, engineering, art, and math. This is the 20th anniversary edition of the convention, which began in 2002. A feature of the convention is the Glyph Awards, which held the ceremony yesterday evening. The Glyph Comics Awards recognizes the best in comics made by, for, and about people of color from the preceding calendar year. Although not exclusive to black creators, the Glyph Awards strive to honor those who have made the greatest contributions to the comics medium in terms of both critical and commercial impact. You can find a complete list of the winners on one of the aforementioned FF social media pages. More information on the East Coast Black Age of Comics Convention is available on the website, ecbacc.com. The convention runs through 7 p.m. tonight. We're saddened to learn of the passing of Sam Gross. The American cartoonist specialized in single-panel comics and was a contributor to numerous publications, including The New Yorker and National Lampoon. He was 89. Today, we're talking about some of this week's news items and more. Joining me are Roberto Ortiz, Camille Richardson, and Josh Pritchett, courtesy of Movers and Shakers Unlimited. Everybody, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to be here.
Good afternoon, Ulysses. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hey, before we get going, Josh, just give us a shout out in terms of when people can, when and where people can catch Movers and Shakers Unlimited.
Well, right now, our Star Trek show, which I'm mostly involved with, is on hiatus until the weekend of June 15th, when the first episodes of Star Trek Strange New Worlds will open. But otherwise, you can catch Movers and Shakers each weekend on Saturday evenings. You catch it live around 8, where my good buddy Brandon Troy, your good buddy as well, I believe, we'll be catching us up on the week's events of pop culture, sports, and other aspects of entertainment. So you'll all want to tune in either through YouTube or at moversandshakers.org.
Well, there you
catch up with that.
Well, there you go. And I, of course, with you on the show, initially I had been thinking that we were going to talk about Star Trek, but then I got Camille, and I'm like, "Well, we can't talk about Star Trek if Camille's on the show."
Jeez, what would we be talking about? What could it be?
I don't want to leave anybody out. So yeah, I thought.
So Camille, do you want to talk Batless versus lightsabers?
Trust me, it's no ill will towards Star Trek. There's no ill will.
I know.
Yeah, hey,
I love Star Wars as well. I love Star Wars and Star Trek equally.
Well, and it's.
I just haven't done the journey yet. That's
I was going to say, it's not that, you know, she doesn't love it.
Yeah, no.
or
even
doesn't.
Growing up,
she had no it.
I mean,
it's a
even
long
growing up,
journey.
I watched some of Next Generation, I watched some of Voyager, and I liked everything I saw. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. There's never ever been ill will. It's just. Another commitment and hit to my wallet,
journey.
I'm sure.
I wasn't trying to call you out, but that does actually raise a interesting point. And all right, heck, what the heck? We'll just go there. I mean, and actually, we can segue to other things because I would absolutely at some point like to know how you all, and I don't blurt something out, Roberto, because I know you. I'd like to know what you all think about the reported closing of Galactic Star Cruiser, but that's not where I top. Yes, that's not where we're going to start.
I have opinions.
I know you do. No, that's not where we're going to start. Even though Camille is more steeped in Star Wars, there's a thing with Star Wars, and I happen to... We weren't live last week. I had occasion to have to go out of town. Very close friend's mother had passed away several months ago. And so he was holding a memorial service. And it just so happens that at that memorial, I ran into another old friend of mine who lives down in Florida and haven't seen her in probably about 30 years. And she has the distinction, I realized, of being the last new friend that I made back when I was going to science fiction and comic conventions back in the day. You know, met her back in 1983 at the World Science Fiction Convention that was held in Baltimore. And anyway, so we were talking a little bit about the state of the fandom today. And I know many of the friends that I made back then, and I sort of alluded to this when I was speaking to Josh earlier, but many of the friends that I made back then were huge fans of Star Wars. And I mean, that's what I just call it, because what I'm talking about is Episode 4, A New Hope. But it was simply Star Wars then. And so here's the thing, though. The movie was escapist fare. It was high adventure. It was action and heroic stuff. And Star Wars is a lot more than that now.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for them, many of my friends from that time have not been able to bridge the gap and make the journey. I was communicating with one of these friends through social media recently, and he was speaking very badly about Andor. Yes, I know.
Are you serious?
Well, here's the thing. It's a little too dark for him.
What is fascism?
Look, it's not all that unusual when you look at Star Wars.
I saw it in the theaters in 1978, so I qualify as part of that generation. I can tell you, what the heck?
Why will we never recognize that Alderaan being blown up was actually mass genocide?
Thank you.
And no one's taken more than a moment of silence for it.
Remember Alderaan, everybody?
Yeah,
Leia, and then Leia had to console Luke after Ben died.
It's not like I lost absolutely every single person I knew and every single place I grew up in.
But
what
that,
the heck?
But it was easy to forget because the focus of the movie.
And you, boy, lost a hobo you just met, two days ago?
And you've got to concentrate on that because they move so quickly on to the next thing.
Hey, at least they even took a moment, because Force Awakens didn't even take a moment, and that was an entire planetary system.
Yeah,
well, but unfortunately, if we had had a Jedi to feel the disturbance in the Force, because that was the moment, you know, it's like, I feel something awful has happened, as if a million voices suddenly cried out in terror and were suddenly silenced.
Last time I checked, you need training, but yeah, whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, I would have sort of hoped that Mary Sue Ray would have.
I hate to dump on it, because I know there are folks who like it, and it did bring in a new generation and so forth. It's just
Which is very loud.
Well, look, my point is that there are a lot of people who, I mean, and I'm something of an outlier, because, and actually, I owe you, Camille, because thanks to you, I started watching the animated series.
Best
and
content.
It really, really is. And for all of you old heads out there, all you OGs who might not have embraced this stuff, let me tell you something. You need to give it a chance.
Yeah.
But
the same in Star Trek, too, with Lower Decks.
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother kind of thing.
I mean,
Star Wars, look, Star Trek is a different thing. That's a different conversation. But, you know, Josh, I want to start with you because, again, this was a conversation we were having. And I recall your comment at the time, and I didn't say anything because I didn't want to waste it since we were doing a show. But your comment at the time was that all this stuff is canon. And that was, I mean, yes, it absolutely is canon. That wasn't my point. It's just that some older fans who are more steeped in where they thought this thing was going or what they thought it was, have not been able to make that leap and embrace some of the newer stuff. I mean, now some people are just off their rocker. I mean, they see diversity and they're like, oh, it's why are you forcing the, yeah, you know, yeah. But that isn't exactly this.
Well,
I mean,
if I'm watching a cartoon, then what is my intellect? You know, it's all based in insecurity.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Anyway, but Josh, I'm curious what you think about that.
Well, first of all, I'm going to say this. I don't really know how to approach certain fans who dismiss Star Wars Andor or the Star Wars animated shows. They are canon. I think that there's a certain aspect of these fans that got very invested in the various novel series that came out from 1991 until Disney Corp bought Lucasfilm.
Mm-hmm.
And considered all of them canon. In fact, I remember
wide erasure.
Yeah, it was pretty big, and of course, a lot of the stuff in those novels had to be adjusted to make room for the continuity of the prequels.
Yep.
I mean, because in a lot of the novels prior to Attack of the Clones, it was established that many Jedi had families outside of the Jedi Order. And of course, now we know, no, that's bogus. They were a celibate order, which I think threw a lot of people.
Sure threw me.
I mean, looking back on it now, it makes sense. Although it wasn't, I don't think it was very practical. But we could talk about Jedi and celibacy later. Let me just sort of, I think, make my point here is that there. In my group, just comparing it for a minute, we had a member in my Star Trek group that I run who was nearly violently opposed to any Star Trek that was not the original.
Wow.
He felt like anything that was not the original was a portrayal of Gene Roddenberry's vision, even though Gene created the Next Generation as well, but he barely wanted to talk about Next Generation. He would never talk about Deep Space Nine, Voyager, or Enterprise.
Wow.
Because he said that they were not Gene's vision. Well, you know, that's kind of ridiculous. But the point is that the Star Wars galaxy is massive. And there are other stories that involve people whose names are not Skywalker or Kenobi or Vader or Palpatine. And what we have seen in the animated shows and with Andor and The Mandalorian, we have seen these other people's stories. We have seen how other people have lived. And there have been, with the people who created Andor and also Rogue One, we saw a new look of Star Wars, but that it remained true to the original story that we saw in New Hope. And we saw many of those characters like Vader and Tarkin and Leia. So, you know, I can't see why other people don't want to, you know, enjoy a bit of expansion.
Well, absolutely. Okay? And then there's also like the actual...
Wait, hold that thought just a minute. Time to remind everybody that you're listening to Fantastic Forum on WERA 96.7 FM and streaming at WERA.FM. We are your community radio station. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. I'm joined today by Camille Richardson, Roberto Ortiz, I'm sorry, I know
oh
who you are.
Oh my gosh.
And Josh Pritchett.
Feel erased.
Yes, you know, and I'm sorry, Camille, you were getting ready to make a point, too?
I was, and I just had it. Oh, no.
Oh, crap. Okay.
I can remember now.
Wait.
Oh. So go ahead.
One thing I was just going to, you know, interject is that, you know, you have these folks who can't get past, okay, this isn't Lucas's vision, this didn't actually come from him, but the funniest thing kind of from all of it is that Clone Wars actually was started by Lucas, and then, like, Filoni was essentially his little Padawan. So as it went on, and eventually, you know, he sold it off, and then he was no longer involved. But Clone Wars was actually his vision and his idea, and
yes.
Filoni took all of that, and, you know, because We know Lucas cannot direct. We know he can't do a screenplay, but we do love his mind. But at least Filoni can do that.
I never mind that the fans themselves were the one who pushed Lucas out the door. They basically were
We're the absolute worst fan base across the
Horrible to him.
A lot of my fellow Star Wars fans are nuts.
Yes.
Horrible. Horrible. Yes. I don't blame the guy. It's like, I had it here. I'm giving you Filoni. He'll basically, I'm going to give him all my brain to him. Star Wars, leave me alone.
And then he also respects the entire, you know, previous EU, now Legends universe. So he does take a lot of that. And actually, you see this mostly in the animated series, is that he's bringing a lot of that old EU stuff now into current canon with Disney.
And I'm going to make you a bet that the movie he's going to be making, this is not a spoiler. He's making a movie. He's going to basically tie up a lot of the loose ends from the Filoniverse, as they call it. I bet you cash that he's going to bring a lot of the stuff from the expanded universe.
Well, you saw the announcement of the name of it, right? Heir of the Empire. So, yeah.
And what character was introduced?
Wait, that's real?
Yeah.
It's real. Really called Heir of the Empire.
That's going to happen.
So they're going to do Ahsoka first, and then they're going to have the crossover movie, and the crossover movie is going to continue everything with Thrawn.
And the cool thing is that if they do that, and what character was introduced in Heir of the Empire?
Oh, that's a book.
Yes, it's a sweet book series.
Yes, that was Timothy Zahn. That was what launched the entire novel series.
My guess is that what he's going to do, which is clever, is a lot of the concepts that were in the expanded universe that not were addressed on the sequels, he can technically introduce them because since they were not addressed in the sequels, that doesn't mean they didn't happen. So, or characters like, Mara Jade. And that would be like a bone that he would be throwing to the fans.
I don't know how that would happen at this point. I mean, I think he could do it.
Let's let Josh get a word in.
I just wanted to finish my point, and I wanted to address what Camilla said at the beginning. What I love about Andor is you're seeing the evil of the Empire. That is more than just Palpatine and Vader. These were like what you said, Camille. These were fascists.
Yeah.
And we're seeing reality in a fascist reality. And this was cited on several shows on MSNBC that this is, you know, the fall of the Republic and the rise of the Empire is more or less kind of what's going on right now. It's sort of like what a lot of us are seeing in the real world.
Yeah.
Is this rise of, you know, this
bigotry and hate.
You know, hate and everything. Yeah, because you know, the other side, they live on fear and hate and everything, and that's the I don't want to get into the politics at all, but you see that, and that's what Andor is kind of addressing, and maybe that's why some of the fans don't like that it's like, you know, stick to Jedi and Sith, don't be getting into all these rebel politics.
Well, and the thing that you're talking about with the politics is like, I mean, that's what Star Wars is.
Yeah, you can't separate it.
It's war, it's military, you're dealing with politics 100%. So I always find it hilarious when people are like, take the politics out of it, take the woke culture out, blah blah blah, and I'm like, yo, you didn't even get the point in 1977, bro.
I get the same thing on Star Trek is about the gay characters and having a black female captain on Discovery. It's like, get the woke out, get rid of that rainbow. It's like, dude, Star Trek has been about diversity and multiculturalism and liberal 60s. Ideology since the 60s, okay?
Yeah.
They live in the freaking Star Trek universe. They don't even have capitalism anymore. They don't live on money. Healthcare is free.
As a true gay.
They pretty much are a communist ideal in Star Trek.
But the weird thing is, if you stop to think about it, both Star Trek and Star Wars have one thing in common in terms of religion. Star Trek, basically, the concept is that the religion has been completely taking out politics. Seriously.
Yes.
And Star Wars is the opposite. Basically, when you see the Jedi, the Sith, and the Jedi specifically being the force, the de facto religion of the Republic, if you stop to think about it. But that's the cool thing.
Into the organized religion of it, which is what I look at as like the Jedi Order. That's organized religion that can get incredibly dangerous, that can lead down very bad paths, Mace Windu. And then you also have the Jedi Way. And the Jedi Way is more what I would say is like, you know, the teachings of Jesus Christ, which I mean, like, I'm not a religious person, but I can get on board with all of that.
Which is funny because Star Trek and Star Wars also both did that. Star Trek, basically, in an episode of Enterprise, they made a point specifically that the Vulcans have lost their way because they were not following the original teachings of Surak. That basically, in the two thousands of years since Surak basically had done the revolution, specifically on Drusian logic, to the Vulcans, the teachings have been corrupted. And so,
well, and the stuff had been lost.
Yes.
And that was why, yes, in that particular, I know the ones you're talking about, and that was great, you know, because the high command, yes, basically went away,
yeah,
and that was bringing the Vulcans, which I was always really confused about watching Interval. I'm like, the high command? Wait a minute. Because they seem more like Romulans,
yes,
quite frankly,
and they were behaving
in terms
them,
of
I mean, they were
the
influenced directly
hierarchy.
By, and also, they were influenced directly by the Romulans.
Apparently.
But the cool, yes, thing is that, mm, the sequels, for all this, for all their troubles, and there were a lot, I like a lot of the idea, I love the idea specifically that the original teachings of the Jedi, that the new order that's going to be formed by Rey, is going to be based on the original teachings of the Jedi, not the thousands of years of interpretation that have been corrupted. That's why Yoda was giddy when all that stuff went up in smoke, that basically they were going to start again from zero. Because along the way, religion tends to forget the original point of why certain things were done. And
yeah, that's not good.
Well, I don't think it's so much that it's forgotten. I think that the problem with organized religion is people. And,
oh, God, yes.
You know, people at the, yeah, at the head of these churches. And, you know, it becomes more of a way to control than, you know, to inspire or,
yep,
to nurture or to enrich.
And that's why,
you know,
I love that episode of Enterprise where they address specifically the concept of them realizing that there's something wrong with the Vulcan society and we need to step it back and basically rethink what we're doing. Because they were becoming, you were right, like Romulans, specifically the Vulcans.
I mean, shoot, look at when Ahsoka was framed.
Yeah.
You know, and all, yeah, that crap that went down. And then she had the opportunity to come back. She's like, nah, y'all, I'm going to pass. And like, you can see Anakin, and he's just like,
you
I
suck,
go
you
with
suck,
you
suck, and I will be dead if I follow you.
You know.
Can I just interject something?
Yes, it's, please.
It's something I've long noticed about religion, especially, you know, the Southern Baptist evangelical, is that I think one thing about them is it's easier, they've decided a long time ago, it was easier to get people into church if you talked more about the battle between God and Satan and less about the Sermon on the Mount,
yeah,
which is really what, it, you know, you're telling everybody, hey, just be good to each other, be kind, be compassionate, even if the other person is different from you, and that will get you to heaven. And it was easier to sell them more on, oh, hey, you have to oppose these people because they're in with Satan and we have to fight Satan, you know. And I think that's the problem with religion, at least over the last, I don't know, 1800 years
very
or so.
Black, mm-hmm, and white
control. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Control,
well,
yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, but you know, just to circle back around to the point that I was making, I think that it's understandable given the prevailing themes of that first movie. And, you know, we saw Lucas take a huge step to the side with Empire Strikes Back. I mean, in fact, I remember a friend of mine saw Empire at some advanced screening before the movie saw a theatrical release.
And she came out saying, I cannot believe he's Duke's father.
No,
what I say out loud to the people on the line.
No, ha, 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 yeah. No, what he said to me was, he said, the Empire Strikes Back pretty effing hard. You know, that's what he said. And I was like, oh, okay.
Limbs got lost, people got frozen.
But when I saw it, I mean, if people who were coming in expecting, yay, the good guys win again, you know, with great ease... No. that's not what this was.
But isn't it funny that Star Trek,
you know,
and Star Wars have the same thing, that they have both have sequels that are considered to be some of the best movies ever made? Star Trek Through the Grand Canyon and Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
I mean, objectively saying, they're amazing films, both.
Well, yeah. I can't argue with that. Although... I can't argue with that.
I think Empire, it was so great because, yeah, I mean, if the Empire was, so, you know, could be beaten bigly in two movies back to back, you wouldn't take it as seriously. I mean, you know, that's why, you know, like more recently with Avengers Infinity War and then Endgame. Okay, you know, having Thanos win at the end of Infinity War. I'm sorry if I spoiled this movie to anybody.
Well, if they haven't seen it by now, shame on them.
It's been out of
yeah, exactly.
Keep
okay.
going, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you establish that Thanos is somebody we all take seriously. I mean, he's part of our cultural lexicon. It's like being this total bad guy villain, super ultimate villain. And, you know, when you say, that guy's a true Thanos, it's like, okay, we better take this guy seriously, you know, and it sets up for the big epic in Endgame, which arguably is best MCU movie out there.
For me, we can debate Winter Soldier.
Yeah, well,
Soldier. Okay, all right. I'm gonna throw out No Way Home.
Hold that thought. hold that thought. Yeah, because that musical cue means it's time for us to take a short break. Because, of course, Fantastic Forum comes to you via WERA 96.7 FM in Arlington, Virginia. We're a community radio station. We rely on you, our listeners, to be able to continue bringing you the quality entertainment that you have come to expect from WERA. Find out how you can get involved. Visit the website at WERA.FM or that of our parent organization, Arlington Independent Media, at arlingtonmedia.org. Find out how you can take some classes, or if you're interested in getting your own radio show, or if you would like to utilize some of the wonderful facilities. There's all sorts of stuff. We got stuff for the kids, too. We've got journalism. We've got summer camp, which is getting ready to come around. All sorts of fun stuff. Avail yourself of the opportunity. WERA.FM and arlingtonmedia.org. Anyway, look, Josh and Camille and Roberto and I are just getting started. We got a whole nother half of the show coming up, so stick around. We're going to promote some of the other wonderful shows coming up later this evening, but we'll be back with more Fantastic Forum just for you right after this. Don't go away. And welcome back to the Fantastic Forum here on WERA 96.7 FM. And streaming at WERA.FM. We are Arlington. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. I'm joined today by Josh Pritchett, Camille Richardson, and Roberto Ortiz. And when we took the break, we were talking a little bit about a franchise that's now owned by Disney that's been around for a little while, and it's called Star Wars, and as Camille points out, it's Star Wars. It's the whole galaxy. It's pretty broad, and I think that is what some people have had problems with, because when that first movie came out back in 1977, there were certain conclusions that people drew. I know I drew certain conclusions. I'm thinking that Darth Vader and Anakin Skywalker are two completely different people, and Anakin Skywalker didn't have a first name. He was just Luke's dad.
Probably were back in 77.
Yes. Well, let's set aside for just a moment that George Lucas didn't really have a plan.
Nope.
He was making this stuff up as he went, and that's just fine. Now, of course, the other thing, and this has nothing to do with anything, but I would just like any fans of the franchise to consider for a moment what the world would be like today had Lucas been successful at acquiring the rights to Flash Gordon as he had originally attempted, rather than having to make up his own stuff. When he was unable to get the rights to Flash Gordon and he wanted to make a science fiction story and he had to make up his own thing, that was a wonderful moment in history. I think that I mean, that's almost worthy of its own time travel story. You know,
something like, that cracks me up that brings it back to the haters is like the folks who like maybe got upset over Kenobi, which personally I enjoyed. I thought it brought more to Leia's character.
Kenobi.
Yes, and I thought it made some things make a lot more sense. And other people are like, oh, well, it breaks canon now. Now things don't make sense for the original series. I'm like, you do understand the original series breaks its own canon, right? Like, can we just take a look at this? And Kenobi doesn't really break any canon. They're just looking for excuses.
Yeah.
I think it fixes canon.
Yeah, I do too.
Like the scene at the end in the last episode, right after they've had the big final battle between Obi-Wan and Vader, and Obi-Wan says, Vader says, you didn't kill Anakin.
Oh.
I killed him.
Wasn't that a beautiful moment?
Just as I will destroy
you. And the changing
you.
Of the colors.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh. So yes. Good.
And the cracked helmet, and you can see his eye.
Well, now you know why he's got that split on his skull.
Which is funny because...
And Obi-Wan says, then my friend is truly is dead. Goodbye, Darth.
And the weird thing is that it ties up perfectly with Rebels, because when Ahsoka did the same thing to him, the split on the helmet was on the other side.
Well, and that's the whole idea. It's like, you know, Obi-Wan couldn't keep him from the dark side. Ahsoka could not keep him from the dark side. But the only time that it worked was Luke. And then that's, you know, when you actually have the full reveal of his full face after, you know, on live action, you know, ever.
And the cool thing is basically that's why Ahsoka and Kenobi basically both accept that he's lost. Because I really did my best trying to get him out of there, and I couldn't do it.
Well, you know, and this is a perfect place to segue into some of the other projects, because Mandalorian just wrapped up, season 3 of Mandalorian just wrapped up a few weeks ago, and we haven't talked anything about that. I, for the most part, did not have a problem with it. I wish that Mando had been a larger character in his own story, but you know they gave you.
But it made sense.
Yeah, you know, they gave you a bunch of other stuff, and particular. I mean, for a story called The Mandalorian, for them to have gone as deep down the rabbit hole as they did, showing you Mandalorian culture and these other Mandalorian characters.
I think it's supposed to mean many Mandalorians at the end of the day, though. The Mandalorian.
And it's a Mandalorian culture. Mm. An exploration of the Mandalorian culture, right?
Yeah. So I don't mind this segue.
But to be fair, one of the things that it shows, and this has to go straight to Filoni. Filoni has a knack as a storyteller. And I know it's Favreau, basically, who also has a throne in there. But
well, I'm glad you mentioned John Favreau's name. Because we've been jocking Dave Filoni all show.
But to be fair to Filoni, Filoni has a knack as a storyteller, which is weird, that of all the storytellers I've seen out there writing Star Wars and fiction in general, boy does he land the landings. Every single story I've seen him doing the ending, Rebels, Clone Wars, Avatar, holy cow, every time he does the ending, it's like, wow, I cannot even foresee how I could have ended that story better. And the ending of just seeing all Clone Wars, right? Including the ending.
So
yes, I have seen all the Clone
Holy
Wars.
Holy cow.
Brutal.
If that had been a movie, oh my God.
I mean, they almost
no happy ending
it that
for
way.
The Jedi.
It felt like a movie. It's like, holy cow, this is amazing. This is the, you know when you see something like Lost and you think, okay, I probably could have come up with something better than that crap. But this is different. And I'm convinced that what Filoni has in mind for Heir of the Empire was going to be basically tying up all these storylines. It's going to be super epic. Because I'm kind of looking forward to see how he pushes. Because the cool thing is that he reminds me of a good comic book writer. You know how comic book writers...
Well, he was a storyboard artist.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he knows exactly how to do this, which is why it made more sense for him to kind of take the reins from Lucas.
Yeah, and the cool thing is that it reminds me of when you read comics, you know that sometimes comic books, you have some awful writers that basically do horrible things to the characters, and you're like, how are they going to fix this mess? And then they bring somebody who's very creative, and he'll find creative ways, like what's going on with the X-Men right now, of tying up all the crap from before and making it clever and showing it in a new way that's like, oh, wow, that fixes the old stuff, and it makes it, I'm looking forward to the future. And I'm looking forward to see how he ties up the original series with the sequels, and that's what they're doing aggressively with the Clone Wars. It's like, with The Mandalorian. It's like he did the same thing with Clone Wars, where he tied off amazingly well the prequels with the original trilogy in terms of fixing the character of Anakin.
Well, all of the outside content has. I mean, you name it. That's what fixes the entire Skywalker saga. Like,
yes.
I was going to say, yeah, I am looking forward to see what Filoni and Favreau do going forward, because they actually maybe love the prequels, and maybe, just maybe, I'm not saying they will, but just maybe I might learn to really like the JJ trilogy.
Well, they're introducing
that's
stuff.
A tall order.
No, but they're introducing clever stuff, because the,
I can appreciate moments, but that is a hard thing to fix.
It's doable.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It really is.
There's so much of it, you know.
Well, and there's so much back and forth with it. I mean, you have the first third of Rise, which is just retconning everything from The Last Jedi. So it's like they already tried to do it within itself.
And you have obviously two directors at war with each other, because it's like we really have completely different visions of this.
Yeah. All right, Josh, what were you going to say there?
Yeah, I'm going to just go ahead and say this. And if I offend some J.J. Abrams fans, well,
don't worry about it.
Just yell at me all you like. I don't care. But I think J.J. Abrams is overrated as a director.
Oh, my God. How could you?
Yeah, and personally, if he was not willing to commit to direct all three films and see a particular vision through all those movies, I mean, this is not on Rian Johnson. I'll get to Rian Johnson at another point, but if he was not willing to direct all three movies, then Disney should have been like, fine, we'll get somebody else to do it.
Mm-hmm.
As for Rian Johnson, okay, there were some parts about The Last Jedi that were okay.
Oh, yeah.
There were some parts I really enjoyed. The final battle between Luke and Kylo Ren was exciting. That was awesome. But, you know, this whole idea of deconstructing Star Wars, that would have been great for a different trilogy with a different group of Star Wars characters.
Yes.
But maybe not with Luke himself. Yes. I just kind of had issues. I just cannot buy, and I've tried to see Luke, the guy who could still see good in Darth Vader, who had done worse things than Ben Solo ever had or ever would, and, you know, still want to, you know, go ahead and kill him in his sleep, even though he knew he would be going to the dark side at that moment. I just don't buy that.
Well, not even just that. I mean, you have this man, and you see it even in Book of Boba Fett, and he's trying to say, like, you know, you can't have attachments, you can't have this, you can't have that. And it's like, how can you possibly say this, Luke? The only reason why you defeated the Empire was because of the attachment to your father. So how can you sit here and do the same crap? That's the one thing I did appreciate from that Yoda moment, where he's like, bro, let it go. Like, it didn't work. It was messed up.
And that's why...
Exactly. Even Yoda realizes after the fact that, what we did, the direction we went in, the no attachments, all that, we were wrong.
And
that was what destroyed us.
And that's what destroyed Anakin.
Yeah, but one of the things that they're going to do is, that's why I'm kind of looking forward for the Rey movie. Is that there's an acknowledgement that they screwed the pooch, specifically in terms of a lot of stuff that happened in the sequels. But they also acknowledge that the character that a lot of people like, and oh boy, they do, trust me, is Rey as a character. So why don't we try to fix some of the mess we left behind?
And how about you develop her? How about you give me a reason why I'm supposed to care about her plight? You know, why don't you give me some kind of connection instead of banking on my nostalgia that, oh, this is going to be one of the three core members, and now you have to love her, and she's going to be the Jedi, and it's like, no, bro, I can't do it. I can't do it.
All right, wait. Do it real quick.
I'm going to throw this out here.
Well, wait. Like, Josh, hold that thought 1 second, because it's time for me to remind everybody that you're listening to Fantastic Forum on WERA 96.7 FM in Arlington, Virginia. and streaming at WERA.FM. Radio Arlington. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. I'm joined by Camille Richardson, Roberto Ortiz, and Josh Pritchett. We've been talking about the epic that is Star Wars and how incredibly inclusive it is. Now, before, Josh, I let you go, I want to just say a couple of things here that I had been thinking about while we've been talking about all this, because a lot of it involved financial decisions, you know, and that was with J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson. I mean, you know, you were talking about Abrams not being willing to commit to direct all three films.
Yep.
They brought Rian Johnson in. Rian Johnson, what he did in that second movie, I didn't hate, honestly. I mean, I had some serious problems with The Force Awakens because, in my estimation, it was far too derivative of the first movie. But because of the financial success of the film, that was what Disney was interested in. That was why they acquired that franchise. They wanted more of that, and it created a problem, quite frankly, thematically and creatively. So, you know, I think that, well, but it's called show business for a reason. Anyway, I'm sorry. Those were a couple of things I wanted to mention. Josh, you were getting ready to make a point.
Well, the thing is, in this upcoming Rey project, I really would like them to bring back John Boyega, and we could have finished Finn's story. Yeah, I know. This is my thing. I felt like when we first saw him in his Stormtrooper outfit in that preview, okay, he was going to be a much bigger part of it.
Yeah,
I thought he was going to turn out to be The Jedi.
Yes.
But Star Wars fans ruined that.
It just seemed like to me he was touched by the Force in some way, and all that got thrown under the bus.
Yep.
And you know, and then like his story arc in Last Jedi didn't make any sense. We have to go to this planet to find a hacker. Then we sneak aboard the Star Destroyer. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. If you could sneak aboard the Star Destroyer, why not bring something called a bomb?
Yeah.
You know?
And also,
that's what you ended up doing anyway.
Stop using common sense,
also,
please.
Also, at that point, when it's towards the end and, you know, he's going to basically sacrifice himself, even though I wanted to see more for that character, I think it would have been a far more powerful moment and given him more of a stance within Star Wars, a higher pedestal that he did deserve if they actually had gone through with it.
Yeah, and also, I felt as though that Rose got shortchanged.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Kelly Marie Tran, thank you.
She didn't deserve what she got.
Nope.
They built her.
Oh, you mean her character got shortchanged. I mean, the actress did too.
They both. That's I have no hate towards any of the actors.
Disney basically acknowledged that, and they basically, I believe she was the lead on Rian, The Last Dragon.
They didn't do it as vehemently as they did with, oh my God, I can't remember her name, from Kenobi, the Inquisitor. Why can't I remember her name?
Oh my God,
crap. And I should...
Starts with an R.
Yes.
My brain.
They were brutal with her. And that's the thing, is that, by the way, the word I've been thinking all afternoon is gatekeeping. The fans who basically do those things are gatekeeping. They basically are trying to say, I'm the keeper of what's true Star Wars or true Star Trek or true Dungeons and Dragons is supposed to be.
Moses Ingram. Yes. Reva, though.
Thank you.
I was trying to think of the
argument. Moses Ingram. She was so awesome.
She is a
fabulous
actress.
And it made sense. Because all of Star Wars is the story of trauma.
Pretty much.
It's war. Yes. And then her what she went through actually made legit sense, so I could understand her point of view and perspective.
Oh, by the way,
no.
One thing I wanted to compliment Filoni is Favreau specifically. It's you're right. Look how compelling the character of Bo-Katan became in the last episode of The Mandalorian. Once she confessed the fact that she regretted all that had happened to Mandalore, and she was blaming herself on what happened.
Of course, she had survivor's guilt.
I know, but that's a cool thing. How that character went to, very interesting all of a sudden, because it's interesting seeing a ruler who now is leading a nation that is in ruins, thinking, I don't want this to happen again, and I was responsible for what happened before. And the cool thing with Rey as a character is that if they could basically add some nuance to the character that way, her having some guilt of being the last survivor of the Jedi or something like that, it would make the character more interesting. And I think they missed that in the sequels in terms of them wanting to make the character of Rey so perfect that she couldn't have any thing.
I was ticked off that she could do the healing stuff. Like, if that had been a specific Grogu thing, that would have made more sense to me. Like, especially if you've gone through, like, Jedi Fallen Order or Survivor or some of, like, the comics or books, you realize that certain Force users, Force sensitives, do have, like, some very specific traits within their abilities, like Quinlan Vos as well. So when they pulled out the, oh, I'm going to heal you, Kylo, that was, I felt like that was BS, and I just could feel, I could feel like Qui-Gon just like in the Force, just like, really?
Yeah. Wait, Josh had been trying to say something a couple of minutes ago. Josh?
No, I think I covered it with John Boyega coming back, wishing John Boyega could come back and they could fix his story arc, but I think Roberto summed it up that, yeah, that's not going to happen.
No.
He has mentioned, like, more so recently, like, it would, while he's still reluctant, he says that he wouldn't say fully no, but I think that's only because it all depends on the story. So if the story's good, I might come back and you actually give this character something, but if you just continue on the way that you had, then no thank you.
Well, you know, again, it's show business. If they write him a fat enough check, I'm sure John Boyega would sign up. I mean, after all,
he was in that... If the story's not good, though, then I don't think he would.
Well, now, he was in that, what do you call it, Pacific Rim, too.
Well, that's also earlier on, and... beggars can't be choosers. You get what you can get. It's called
show business. And, you know, I'm sure he has something of a choice in terms of the roles that he accepts.
Oh, at this point, I think, 100% he does.
Yeah.
Well, and even then. So we're almost out of time, but I kind of want to... And there's no way to do any kind of summation about any of this because it's just too broad. I mean, that's just the nature of Star Trek. Listen to me, Star Trek. Star Wars. I knew it was some kind of star thing we were talking about. I knew that. You know,
something with Star. Battlestar?
That's a whole other story, too.
Just to sum up the Star Trek, Star Wars thing, the two would not exist without each other, okay?
I agree.
George Lucas said in interviews... Hey, I was a huge Star Trek fan in college. I used to watch the show all the time. It inspired me to do Star Wars.
If the first Star Wars movies had not
been a success, we would not have had Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Would have been a lot harder to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have been a lot harder. And, you know, if we hadn't had that, we wouldn't have had Wrath of Khan. We wouldn't have had all the other Star Trek movies, Star Trek The Next Generation.
Well, it's like musicians
the franchise
as well.
Might have ended.
It's the same thing with musicians. And it's like, you know, you might not like this certain band or whatever, but, like, you realize they were influenced by this.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Although, I'm constrained to point out that the fervor of Star Trek fans, and I know a lot about this because I was there, I think it would have happened eventually. It just would have taken longer because those conventions and the fandom was going nowhere and absolutely needed to be serviced. And that's one of the reasons why I say, you know, a lot of people, I don't hate Star Trek, the motion picture. In fact, I feel as if it's the film that had to be made when it was made because, and I know, I'm deviating from what I was talking about, a whole different thing now, but Star Trek had not become the cultural phenomena that it is today back in 1979. The show had barely been off the air for 10 years, and while the fandom was starting to take root, you had seen the animated series. You know, there was still great interest. And, in fact, NBC acknowledged that they canceled the show way too soon. You know, I mean, it's just that was the landscape of network television at the time. And Gene Roddenberry was incredibly difficult for the networks to work with. I mean, talk about biting the hand that feeds you. I mean, it's just crazy. So, anyway, but... You know, Star Wars, you're right, Josh, that these two franchises would not exist without one another.
And we would be all, I think, personally poor for it.
Yep, agreed.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's part of the reason why when my friends have talked about, especially this guy who was talking bad about Andor. I mean, I understand it because, thematically, the tone of that first film was very, very different. But it remains that Andor is completely in line with what was presented in that first movie. And it is reasonable, it is acceptable, and it's really great entertainment. And okay, so it may not be total escapist fare like Star Wars was, but there is a great deal of value to it. And I don't think that we need to be dismissive of it. Just say, that's not for me. And keep it moving.
I'm going to answer so many questions, too, though. Like, yeah. It's so interesting of how that will lead right into, you know, Rogue One and then right into A New Hope. And I know it's a hard start. Like, it's slow. It's very much, I forget who said it, but they said it perfectly, that the beginning of Andor, it's very much, the entire thing is like a novel. So you get so much exposition in the beginning, and it's a lot to take in. So it takes a number of episodes before you're kind of hooked. But once you are and you see the vision of what they're trying to do, you're like, holy crap. Okay, this is on another level. I am down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I was committed to it. People told me, you got to watch the first three episodes. I'm not really into binge watching stuff. So but I said, look, I'm committed because it was Star Wars. No, I mean, I was going to watch it.
You've watched that much of everything else?
I mean, it's got to be something that's really hard to turn me off to where I won't watch it at least once. I mean, there's stuff that I won't go back to, but I'm going to at least watch it once. You know, but I don't know. I think part of it is generational. What can I say?
I don't know.
Well,
I don't know about that.
I think there's a lot of gatekeeping. I really do.
I think that, I think we have to break through the gatekeepers because I think this is the thing. The franchises will not survive if everything is static. They have to grow. We have to not so much reimagine them, but add to them, okay? We cannot just simply keep, the friend I talked about earlier, he approached me one time with a fanfic thing, a Star Trek fanfic that was set completely in the 23rd century with a whole other cat that was just another version of Kirk.
Josh, I hate to do this, but I'm going to have to cut you off because we're out of time. It's like,
thank you. Well, someday I'll talk about it on my show.
And we'll get you back on this one, but... Hey, I'd like to thank my panelists and you too for tuning in. Of course, you can check Fantastic Forum out as a podcast. Thanks to our friends at the Great Geek Refuge. Download it, take it with you wherever you get your favorite podcasts. The show also re-airs each and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. right here on WERA. And we're back in first run each and every Saturday from 4 to 5. And you can visit the website at fantasticforum.tv. where you can find complete episodes, you can get the segments from the TV version broken out. It's great stuff. Anyway, look, enjoy the rest of your weekend and come back again next week. Same bat time, same bat station. Thank you, people.